Well, welcome back to Chapter 5 of the Plain English Study Guide for the Amateur Radio Technician Class License. My name is Richard Clem, W0IS. I'm the author of that study guide, and we're continuing on in our audio presentation, starting now with Chapter 5, different kinds of equipment that you'll be using as an amateur radio operator, and how to turn that into a station. Well, we already heard about an antenna. An antenna is a thing that takes an RF signal and turns them into radio waves, and vice versa. Well, the thing that generates that radio frequency energy is called a transmitter. So a transmitter generates radio frequency signals, you don't want to just send out a radio signal. You want to be talking or sending some information with it. Well, that process of adding information, of combining speech with the radio frequency signal, that process is called modulation. Modulation means adding sound or adding information to a radio wave. A transceiver is a combination of a transmitter and receiver. For voice transmissions, oftentimes that transceiver will have a PTT button, a push-to-talk switch on the microphone. And, why is it called that? It's because you push it when you want to talk. When the push-to-talk switch is pushed, it causes the radio to go into transmit. And when you let go of the push-to-talk button, it causes the radio to go into receive. So that's kind of an obvious point, but it actually might be on the test. Most modern transceivers have two ways of setting the frequency. Usually there's something called a VFO, a variable frequency oscillator. And the VFO just means the frequency knob. If you want to put your radio on 146.52, you either punch in or turn the dial of the VFO, the variable frequency oscillator, until the radio is set to 146.52. Many radios will have memory frequencies, so you can store a frequency in memory, and then you just go to memory channel number 2, and channel number 2 is 146.52 megahertz or whatever. So again, something pretty straightforward, but there actually will be a couple of questions about that on the test. Most FM radios will have something called the squelch, and a squelch is just something that turns off the speaker when a signal is not coming in. Some radios, especially on FM, will use sub-audible tones, especially on a lot of repeaters now. To get into a particular repeater, you have to transmit a particular sub-audible tone. They're commonly known as PL tones, but the official name is CTCSS tones. I don't think I have to remember those letters, CTCSS, but you do have to remember that if you're unable to get into a repeater for some reason, maybe you forgot to transmit the CTCSS tone, or you're transmitting the wrong CTCSS tone. So if you are not able to get into a repeater, that would be an explanation of why. The part of the transmitter that increases the power output is called an RF power amplifier. That kind of makes common sense. They kind of throw you at a loop on the question there, because they say in a handheld transceiver, what's the name of the part that increases the power output? The answer is the RF power amplifier. That would be true of a handheld transceiver or any other kind of transceiver. So the fact that it's a handheld transceiver is just kind of a red herring. But the part of the radio that increases the power is the RF power amplifier. One thing you need to know, that if the SWR gets too high, remember we talked about standing wave ratio, SWR, when we talked about antennas. You want a good SWR, 1:1. You don't want a bad SWR, like 4:1. Because for one reason is, if the SWR gets too high, that could potentially damage the radio. And most modern radios are set up so that they'll automatically turn down the power if they detect that the SWR is too high. So you need to know that for the test, that some modern transceivers do that. Microphone plugs are not standardized, so if you buy a new microphone for your radio, you probably have to install the connector yourself, and there are a bunch of wires in there, because there's the push-to-talk switch, there's the microphone itself, maybe the microphone even has a power supply. So if the question asks, every microphone for every amateur radio transceiver is exactly the same, well, the answer is no, they all have a different plug on them. I think we already mentioned that most amateur equipment, especially if it's designed for use in a car, will operate off 12 volts. Well, if you want to run it at home, well, you need to get a power supply. A power supply is something that you plug into the wall and turns the 120 volts AC into 12 volts DC. And you want a regulated power supply so that the power doesn't fluctuate, when you accidentally putting out 20 watts and we just fried your radio. You want a good regulated power supply so that that doesn't happen. And you want to make sure that you have enough current capacity to run it. There's kind of a trick question in the test. What do you need to know when you pick out a power supply? And one of the questions says, do you need to keep in mind the efficiency of the transmitter? Do you need to know how much the power the receiver and control circuits use? Do you need to know about the power supply's regulation and heat dissipation? And the answer is yes, all of the above. You need to know all of those things when you're shopping for a power supply. Where's the best place to make the negative connection to the radio's power supply? The answer is directly to the vehicle battery. That's one of the questions. One thing about transmitters is they might sometimes put out harmonics. And a harmonic just means that when you're transmitting on one frequency, you might be putting out a little bit of a signal on two times that frequency and three times that frequency, etc. So in other words, if you're transmitting on 7 megahertz, you might be putting out a harmonic on 14, on 21, on 28. And those might potentially cause interference. So you want to watch out for that. Two other things that might cause interference on your radio are fundamental overload and spurious emissions. Just know those two terms. Those are two bad things that might cause interference on your received signal. What if somebody's AM or FM radio or TV or something is picking up your signal? Well, that's bad. You're not supposed to be doing that. That might be because you have a strong signal and that their cheap radio next door, they're just picking that up. One possible way to do that is to take care of that is to put a filter on their radio to filter out the frequency that you're transmitting on. So that's kind of an art, solving interference problems. You want to make sure that all of your coax connections are made properly, because a loose coaxial connection might be one of the things that causes interference like that. If in your car you get a high-pitched whine from the speaker of your radio, or you might even be transmitting a high-pitched whine while you're driving along, that's probably caused by the car's alternator. When you rev up the engine, the pitch increases. That's kind of a telltale sign that it's alternator whine, and you would need to put some kind of filter to keep that interference out. Let's see. There's one question kind of stands alone on the test. It says, "What do you do if your VHF transceiver is being overloaded by a nearby FM broadcast station? What should you do if that happens?" The right answer is put a band reject filter. So in other words, on your radio, you put this band reject filter that rejects the band of this FM radio station down the street, and that would filter it out. So that would be one way to solve that kind of problem of interference. What if you're getting into somebody's telephone? That probably means that their phone is inadvertently acting as a radio receiver, and the best way to take care of that is to put an RF filter on their telephone. What do you do if somebody ever tells you that you're causing interference? The first thing you do is you make sure that everything is working okay at your station. Make sure that all the connections are good. Make sure that it's really not your fault. And all of the following items might be useful depending on the situation. Snap-on ferrite chokes, low-pass and high-pass filters, and band-pass reject and band reject and band-pass filters. That's something you need to know. Part 15 is an unlicensed device that sometimes puts out low-powered radio signals. So a Part 15 device is, your neighbor just bought a toy radio-controlled drone. Well, the transmitter for that drone is a Part 15 device. If somebody's Part 15 device is causing interference, you should politely tell them that it's their responsibility to fix it. But also you want to use a little bit of common sense and work with them in doing that. Many receivers have a noise blanker that turns off repetitive noise. So if you have a constant clicking noise, noise blanker might take care of that. Some receivers, you just need to know that they might have an automatic gain control to keep the audio level relatively constant if the power level goes up and down. More about a receiver, you need to know that your receiver has a part inside called a mixer. The mixing stage is the one that changes one frequency to another. It also has an oscillator inside of there that is part of that mixing circuit. That is part of what's called a super heterodyne receiver. So a receiver, you don't need to know that word, but you do need to know that a receiver might have a mixer and an oscillator inside. A detector is the thing that changes the radio wave into a sound wave, or into an AF signal, I should say, an audio signal. Detector basically changes radio signals into audio signals. The two things that are important when you're shopping for a receiver is it selective? Can it really sort out stations that are packed together next to each other on the dial? If you can separate two close stations, then you have a very selective receiver. A sensitive receiver means that it can really pull in weak signals. Those are the two things that you want to know about a receiver when you go shopping for one. Is it a real good selective receiver, and is it a good sensitive receiver? An RF preamplifier can make a receiver more sensitive, and that would go between the antenna and the receiver. You probably already know that some radios have a scanning function that allow you to scan a bunch of different frequencies. And here's a little dead giveaway for you. If you get that question, you get a question that says, blah, 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 radio, blah, 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 scanning function. And then you look at all the right answers. One of the answers has the word scan in it, and that is the right answer. So it's kind of a common sense question. It's not a trick question. It's just an easy question. So when you get the question about scanning receivers, just remember that it will have the answer scan in it. A transverter is something that changes your transceiver from one band to another band. So for example, if you want to get on the 222 megahertz band, well, you can't really buy transceivers for that band, but you can buy a transverter. And you hook that up to your 28 megahertz transceiver, and it changes it in it allows you to transmit and receive on a different band. One important thing that you want to have in your station is a dummy load. That is it's something that you hook up to your transmitter instead of an antenna. So you can test, make sure your transmitter is working okay, but you're actually not going out over the air. Or as they put it on the test, it prevents radiation of signals while making tests. It consists of a non-inductive resistor and a heat sink. And that brings us to the end of Chapter 5. So you know pretty much everything you need to know about transmitters and receivers to pass the test. In Chapter 6, we will talk about the different modes, like AM, FM, SSB, that amateurs use. Again, for more information about this course, please visit my website, WZeroIS.com.